Dr. Gary Collins, a widely known Christian counselor and professor at Trinity Evangelical Divinity School, a seminary out in the Midwest, highly respected, his integrity unquestioned, but it was not always so. In an article he published in Today's Christian Woman, winter issue 1980, entitled, "I Hate to Be Critical, But," he gives this account. He says, "I had finished my courses in graduate school and had moved to the West Coast, where I was to begin a program of practical training in counseling. The work was rigorous, but still there was time for church, and soon I found myself involved in the active college and career group of a large congregation. Before long, I was elected president of the group and watched with real satisfaction as our numbers grew and our outreach expanded. Then it happened. I was told, confidentially, that some established members of the church had concluded that I was a communist agent sent from the Midwest to attract a following of Christian young people who would rise up against their country when it came time for the revolution. The fact that I had grown up in Canada made me even more suspect. In the opinion of my critics, who never confronted me directly, I was not just a dangerous revolutionary masquerading as a Christian, I was a foreign spy. I was dumbfounded. Nothing could have been further from the truth. And I was amazed that my vigorous church activities could have been so misinterpreted. When I went to the pastor and offered to leave, he smiled kindly and admitted that he had heard from the critics. Forget what they think, he advised. Keep on doing what you believe God wants you to do." There's two things to note in that particular passage that I read from that article. Two truths that always hold true. Leaders will face opposition. And secondly, leaders must go on in spite of it. It's almost comical to think that someone could come up with such accusations as he faced. But whether they are legitimate or border on the ridiculous, leaders will face opposition. The advice of his pastor was well put. Go on and do what God wants you to do and forget about it. A leader must realize he's going to face opposition and learn to go on in spite of it. Nehemiah is a perfect example. Nehemiah, as he led the Jews in the rebuilding of the walls, some 50 or 60 years after Ezra had returned from captivity to build the temple, as he led the Jews at this period of time in this project, he faced opposition every step along the way. He faced mockery in chapter 2 and again in chapter 4. That is ridicule or derision. In other words, people laughed at it. The opposition laughed at it. Now, that's hard to take. Does anyone laugh at you to your face or behind your back? It tends to bother you. He also faced conspiracy in chapter 4. Not only was it just Sanballat and Tobiah, those that lived nearby, but they sought out and found other allies from the south, from the west, so that Jerusalem was completely encircled by those who were opposing them. And now as we come to chapter 6, after Nehemiah has successfully conquered those first two aspects of opposition, they throw four more at him. Well, one of those he was facing all the way along. But we have recorded for us four more aspects of the opposition here in chapter 6. In this chapter, we find that he faces treachery. They sought to betray him or to trick him into going to a place where he would be vulnerable either to assassination or capture. When that didn't work, they threatened him. External pressure. Then they used subversion. They tried to get him to yield to temptation to do something wrong so that they could assassinate him character-wise. And then we find that all along that Tobiah and Sanballat had their people on the inside, their spies, those who had infiltrated and those who were able to exert internal pressure. Through all this opposition, Nehemiah emerged victorious, accomplished the task, and is an absolute model for leaders in all generations. What Nehemiah faced, though, is not unique just to those who are in leadership. If you're here this morning and you're saying, "But I'm not a leader," think again. Whether you're a leader or not, you still face the same sort of things that a leader faces, that Nehemiah faced, and as leaders face today. People are likely to laugh at you for your faith. People might even conspire against you. People might try to trick you or to subvert you or to tempt you to do that which is wrong. People oppose you and place pressure on you externally or even from the inside in your job, in perhaps even your family, in your associations, whatever. We all need to learn to deal with these things, whether we're a leader or not. And those in leadership capacity especially need to learn to deal with them. How did Nehemiah deal with this opposition? What did he do? How did he react? That's what we find here in chapter 6. Now, opposition is either vindictive or manipulative. Some people, in what they do, just simply are vindictive. In other words, they want to make you feel bad. They want to hurt your feelings. It's just a matter of vengeance. You know, well, they think that you mistreated them. Maybe sometimes you have. That they just want to get back at you. Now, that's one thing. But the worst thing about being in a position of leadership is having those that oppose you try to manipulate you. And a person that is in leadership capacity in the church can never afford to be manipulated, because he must stand for what's right and he must obey God. So let's look at chapter 6. And here we're going to see that Nehemiah's life exemplifies five principles that will guide us in dealing with opposition. Nehemiah's life here exemplifies five principles that will help guide us in dealing with opposition. First of all, in verses 1 to 4, principle number 1, the leader must be guided by a set of priorities. The leader must be guided by a set of priorities. You see, following a set of predetermined priorities will help you to avoid the problems that come when the opposition rears its ugly head. In chapter 6, verse 1, it says, "Now it came to pass, when Sanballat and Tobiah and Geshem the Arabian and the rest of the enemies heard that I had built the wall and that there was no breach left in it, though at that time I had not set up the doors upon the gates, that Sanballat and Geshem sent unto me, saying, 'Come, let us meet together in one of the villages in the plain of Ono.' But they thought to do me mischief. And I sent messengers unto them, saying, 'I am doing a great work, so that I cannot come down. Why should the work cease while I leave it and come down to you?'" The opposition gets nowhere by mocking the Jews or by conspiring against them in order to intimidate them. So now they try to appear as though they are very easy to get along with. "Well, Nehemiah, we've had our differences, but let's just get together and we can talk things out. And we would like for you to come at our invitation to the plain of Ono, into one of the cities, and we'll meet together." Now, Ono is located very close to the border, very close to the territory occupied by Sanballat and Tobiah. Nehemiah recognizes, and he makes the comment in verse 2 at the very end, "But they thought to do me mischief." How did he know? Perhaps he just was going on their character. Perhaps he had heard. We don't know. But he realized the true situation was they did not want to talk. They wanted to put him in a vulnerable position, away from his people, his city, his defenses, where they could either capture him or else assassinate him. But what is Nehemiah's answer? I think perhaps that Nehemiah may not fully have understood what they wanted to do at this point. You see, Nehemiah is the author of the book, and he may well have added the comment about the mischief later on. It may be that he had some inkling at least here. In verse 3, he says this when he replies to them. He says, I'm doing a great work. Now, he's not bragging. The word great here simply means an important work, or one that takes a lot of effort. It's a large or huge responsibility. I'm doing a great work. I cannot come down. Why should the work cease while I come down to you? Now, I suggest to you that many people in a place of leadership would have responded. They would have went. Why? Well, big deal. I mean, you know, Nehemiah, I'm in charge, and here's these dignitaries from the surrounding nations. They want to get together for a summit. I mean, it'd look real good. It'd make some political points at home, maybe, if I could meet together with them and we could reduce some of the tension. But that was not Nehemiah's thought. Nehemiah had his priorities. He said, why should the work that God has called me to do cease while I come and talk to you? As one author put it, it's a good thing that Nehemiah said, oh no, to oh no, because he would have been in a very difficult situation if he would have went. But I suggest to you that it was his set of priorities that kept him out of trouble. Now we need that as leaders. And it's important that our priorities be adhered to consistently. Look at verse 4. Yet they sent unto me 4 times in this way, and I answered them after the same manner. They kept sending back, saying, now Nehemiah, come on out, let's have a talk. And Nehemiah kept sending them back the same message over and over again. It's important that a leader have his priorities in order, and that he knows where he's going, and that he adheres to them, and if he does so, it will eliminate a lot of the problems. The story is told of Napoleon Bonaparte, the great 18th century, maybe the wrong century, back in the 1700s. I always get them centuries mixed up. With the great conqueror of Europe, the one who was not a very principled man morally, but one who did great things because of his force of character, once encountered his former landlady. Just bumped into her. This was after he had become famous and won many victories. He asked his landlady if she remembered a man by the name of Bonaparte that used to board at her home. She replied, he was disagreeable, always busy, and he stayed to himself. To which Napoleon replied, had I used my time as you desired, I would not today be commander of the army of France. Napoleon may not have been a very godly man. Indeed, he wasn't. But he achieved what he achieved because he had a set of priorities. They were always before him, and he applied himself. Nothing distracted him from his appointed goal. We need leaders who have that quality. A leader must be guided by a set of priorities. And if we will be guided by those priorities, the opposition will not be able to stop us. And then principle number 2. The leader must be guided by a courageous spirit. In other words, a leader must be fearless, or at least act as though he were. He must be guided by a courageous spirit. Now look at verse 5. Then sent Sanballat his servant unto me, in like manner, the 5th time, with an open letter in his hand. Now, this is a new tactic. All the other letters, the previous 4, came privately to Nehemiah. Letter number 5 evidently is read openly in the public, or out in public, maybe in the town square or wherever. Why? Because it was meant to exert external pressure upon Nehemiah. The letter consisted of a threat. Look at verse 6. In which was written, it is reported among the nations, and Geshmu saith it, that thou and the Jews think to rebel, for which cause thou buildest the wall, that thou mayest be their king according to these words. And thou hast appointed prophets to proclaim concerning thee at Jerusalem, saying, there is a king in Judah, and now shall it be reported to the king according to these words. Come now, therefore, and let us take counsel together. They said, Nehemiah, the rumor is, you know, the rumor mill. That's what the opposition uses. The rumor is, Nehemiah, that you are not just here because the king of Persia, Artaxerxes, allowed you to come to do this work for God, but the real reason you're here is to become king of Jerusalem. And we have heard this, Nehemiah. And Nehemiah, we're going to write a letter to this effect, and we're going to send it back to King Artaxerxes and tell him. Now, Nehemiah, wouldn't you like to come over to Ono and talk to us? It was a threat. External pressure applied. They wanted the work stopped. They felt they could no longer dominate Jerusalem once the wall was up. And so they threatened him. It's not unusual to be threatened in one way or another if you're in a position of leadership. How does one respond to a threat? Well, first of all, you must not knuckle under to such pressure, but instead, you must trust in God. Look at verse 8 and 9. Nehemiah says, and I sent unto him, saying, there is no such things done as thou sayest, but thou inventest them in thine own heart. For they all made us afraid. Now, Nehemiah says editorially here, for they all made us afraid, saying, their hands shall be weakened from the work that is not done, that it is not done. Now, therefore, O God, strengthen my hand. How does a leader respond to a threat? First of all, he just simply calmly denies it. You just invent this in your own mind. I think it's essential that a leader deny at some stage, because it wasn't going to change the opposition's mind, but it certainly was necessary for those who followed Nehemiah. He calmly denies the allegation, and then he simply leaves the outcome in God's hands. He says what they were trying to do was to get us in fear to stop the work. And he just simply goes to God in prayer and he says, oh God, strengthen my hands. There's your response. Calm denial. Leave the outcome in God's hands. There was a general pope named Pope, P-O-P-E, who was appointed commander of the Army of Virginia, the Northern Army, in 1862 during the war between the states. General Pope immediately sent out a letter to his southern counterparts threatening all sorts of catastrophes. The letter was headed, Headquarters in the Saddle. General Stonewall Jackson reportedly replied verbally to those in the southern leadership who had received the letter, why pay any attention to a general who obviously doesn't know his headquarters from his hindquarters? Referring to the fact that he headed at headquarters in the saddle. But I suggest to you that General Jackson knew how to respond to a threat. Why pay any attention? Simply deny it. Leave the outcome in God, and you just go right ahead and do what you've been doing. Do what the pastor told Dr. Collins to do. Keep doing what God wants you to do. That requires a courageous spirit. For all Nehemiah knew, the letter would be sent to King Artaxerxes, and he had no idea how Artaxerxes would respond. But that was in God's hands. He could do nothing about it. For him, he was going on boldly with the task that God had for him to do. That is the response of a leader. Nehemiah was one. That brings us to leadership principle number 3 here as we look at the principles which will guide us in dealing with the opposition. Number 3, the leader must be guided by a sense of responsibility. Verses 10 and 11. He says, afterward I came unto the house of Shemaiah, the son of Deliah, the son of Mehetabel, who was shut in. And he said, let us meet together in the house of God within the temple, and let us shut the doors of the temple, for they will come to slay thee, yea, in the night will they come to slay thee. And I said, should such a man as I flee? The fellow that he went to see was a prophet, perhaps a religious leader, no doubt. He asked Nehemiah to come to him. And it says that he was shut in. Now, there's been several theories espoused as to why he was shut in his house. Some say it was some sort of ceremonial uncleanness according to the old Jewish law. I don't believe that's so because he was willing to leave the house to go to the temple. Others think that possibly he was ill. I don't believe that's so either because, again, he offered to go with Nehemiah to the temple. I believe he shut himself in his own house to feign to Nehemiah that he was in fear of his own life. And so he calls Nehemiah, and his advice to Nehemiah is, let us both go to the temple. Why? So we can go in and shut the door. If you go back to verse 1, you remember the comment that Nehemiah made at the very close of verse 1. He says, we've not yet set up the gates. We've got the walls up, but we haven't set up the gates. But Ezra built the temple 50 plus years earlier, and the temple had gates and heavy doors. It was extra protection. He said, let us go and we'll shut ourselves in the temple. And then this self-proclaimed prophet offers an oracle or a prophecy. As it is worded in the original Hebrew, it comes across as such. He says, for they will come to slay thee. Yea, in the night will they come to slay thee. He's saying, Nehemiah, now I've got it from the Lord that if you don't go protect yourself and hide and lock yourself in the temple, that Sanballat and Tobiah and all the opposition is going to come in the night and are going to kill you. Nehemiah's response, should such a man as I flee? I don't believe that that was pride. I don't believe that his response had to do with his manhood or anything like that. I think it was an honest question meant to give an honest answer. I cannot, because after all, I am the one that is responsible for the work. I am in charge. What will happen to the work if everybody sees me flee? What happens to God's work if the one God has chosen to put in charge runs? He was tempted to yield, but he considered his responsibility and would not do so. Often the leader is tempted to run, or is tempted to run, to flee, or to offer to quit, or to resign, whatever. But he must always consider his God-given responsibility. Should such a man as I flee? And then leadership principle number 4 here, in the same context, Nehemiah gives another reason, or we find another reason why he would not enter into the temple. And this pictures for us the 4th principle that will guide us in dealing with opposition. The leader must be guided by an uncompromising attitude. The leader must be guided by an uncompromising attitude. You see, this temptation that was put before him was a temptation to violate God's standards. If you go back to Numbers chapter 18 and verse 7, the law of the Old Testament, the Bible says, therefore, speaking to Aaron, the priesthood, that is, therefore thou and thy sons with thee shall keep your priest's office for everything of the altar and within the veil, and you shall serve. I have given your priest's office unto you, a service of gift, and the stranger that cometh near shall be put to death. You see, if anybody went into the temple proper, not just the outer court, but the temple itself, who was not a priest, he was to be put to death. The Bible records for us in the book of 2 Chronicles, chapter 26, verse 16 and following, an incident where a king Uzziah, went into the temple and offered incense unto God. He was confronted there by the priests, and they told him that he had no place. It was against the law. He was not to be in the temple. And as the priest stood watching Nehemiah, he became leprous. Leprosy broke out on his forehead. It was a serious thing to violate God's law, his standard in regard to the temple, and Nehemiah knew this. And so in verse 11, after he says, should such a man as I flee, he says this, And who is there who, being as I am, would go into the temple to save his life? I will not go in. In other words, Nehemiah is saying, I'm not a priest. How can someone like me go in the temple even to save his life? I mean, that's kind of stupid, isn't it? I'll go in the temple to save my life, and if I go in the temple not being a priest, what happens? I forfeit my life. He says, and lo, I perceive that God had not sent him, but that he pronounced this prophecy against me, for Tobiah and Sanballat had hired him. Therefore he was hired that I should be afraid and do so. That is, go into the temple. And do so, and sin, and that they might have a matter for an evil report, that they might reproach me. You know, if we can just get old Nehemiah to go into the temple and violate God's standards, then they can go to the people and say, hey, your leader is supposed to be here doing something for God, but he doesn't pay any attention to God's law, and he's afraid for his life. It would have been an evil report that would have undermined the authority of Nehemiah. This was not the only time that such a thing was attempted, according to verse 14, where Nehemiah says, my God, think upon Tobiah and Sanballat according to their works, and on the prophetess Noadiah and the rest of the prophets who would have put me in fear. There was a whole list of prophets who were constantly engaged in trying to make Nehemiah fearful and stop. They all were working for the opposition. But Nehemiah had an uncompromising attitude. You must never compromise your integrity as a leader. It has been said that it is not enough for a gardener to love flowers. He must also hate weeds. It's not enough for a leader to love success and accomplishments, but he must also hate sin. For it is sin that will undermine his very authority and his right to lead. Five principles that will guide us in dealing with opposition. We have a set of priorities, a courageous spirit, a sense of responsibility, an uncompromising attitude, and now number five. A leader must be guided by a sense of tolerance. A sense of tolerance. Look at verse 17. Moreover, in those days, the nobles of Judah. Now that's the people in Jerusalem who was helping Nehemiah build the walls. Moreover, in those days, the nobles of Judah sent many letters unto Tobiah. And the letters of Tobiah came unto them. For there were many in Judah sworn unto him, because he was the son-in-law of Shechaniah, the son of Ara, the son of Joanan or something like that, had taken the daughter of Meshulam, the son of Barishiah. In other words, Tobiah had married into Judaism. He had family ties. And so he had people on the inside actually working with Nehemiah, building the walls, who were in reality working for Tobiah, opposing what Nehemiah was trying to get them to do. Internal pressure. Infiltration. The leader must realize that it's often those who work with them who will in reality oppose them. But just because such exists and we can expect it does not mean that we are to constantly confront them, but instead, sometimes it is best that we remain tolerant. I don't think this was some sort of information that Nehemiah never had a hold of until after the job was done. I think he knew this all along. The name Tobiah is a Jewish name. His son has a Jewish name, according to verse 18. They were evidently Samaritans who married into a Jewish family. It was well known. And Nehemiah listened. He knew there were people on the inside who were opposed. And Nehemiah never ran them off. He never got in a big ruckus. He never caused a problem. He just went on. He let them do what they were doing, and he went on and did what he was doing. He let them send their letters and receive their letters and make their comments and offer their criticisms and spread their rumors and spread their gossip and defame his character. And he just went on and did what God wanted him to do. Verse 19 says, also they reported his good deeds before me. It was these people who kept coming to Nehemiah saying, oh, now old Tobiah, he's a good old boy. Why, he wouldn't do anything to harm us. Why, we're his kinfolk. You ought to go out there and visit with old Tobiah out there at Ono. And they probably said things like, did you know that our leader Nehemiah won't even go over there to Ono for the summit? I mean, he's the laughing stock of the whole world here. I mean, you know, Nehemiah just went on and did what Nehemiah was supposed to do. Sometimes it is our opposition who unwittingly provide a lot of help. It is said that General Eisenhower never made a major decision until he found someone who strongly opposed it. Most of us would rather be a failure who is praised in the process than to accept a little criticism along the way and benefit from it. Nehemiah, all the way through the first six chapters, has not ever presented a bad example of any kind as a leader. And he doesn't soil his hands at this point. No doubt, these people were one of his great assets. Because he always knew what Tobiah was up to. Everything Tobiah threatened, everything that they came to him, everything that came round about to him, he knew where his enemy was and what he was doing all the time. And perhaps he was such a good leader because he knew his opposition so well. If a leader is going to deal with opposition, he's going to have to remember these five principles. Be guided by a set of priorities. Be guided by a courageous spirit, a sense of responsibility, and an uncompromising attitude. And be tolerant at the same time. What was the outcome? Verses 15 and 16 give us the outcome. So the wall was finished in the 20th and 5th day of the month, Elul, in 52 days. And it came to pass that when all our enemies heard of this, and all the nations that were about us saw these things, they were much cast down in their own eyes, for they perceived that this work was wrought by our God. I suggest to you the building of these walls in 52 days is an absolute triumph of concentration amidst every possible kind of distraction. Because Nehemiah was the leader he was, God was glorified in the end. Now, if you are a leader, or if you should be a leader, don't think that you can avoid criticism or opposition. It has been said that there is a threefold method by which you can always avoid criticism. Say nothing, do nothing, and be nothing. But as a Christian, as a leader, a Sunday school teacher, a deacon, a person who holds a position in the church, or just a person who is the head of their home, or as a leader in their family or on the job, those who exert a Christian testimony, or just any Christian who might face the things Nehemiah faced. Remember, you can avoid that. Just say nothing, do nothing, and be nothing. The trouble with that is, God calls for us to say something, to do something, and above all, to be something.